Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Good evening, Carlos. One of the most beautiful days you could ever have here in Ohio. The last few days have just been picture perfect. Great weather to get out and play a little golf, and I've been stuck in the office working. Oh, man. Hey, road-weary PGA Tour players finally get a week off. We learned Davis loves three picks. The LPGA is heading to France for its final major of the year, and the NFL season started last week. Did anyone even watch Dustin Johnson dominate at the BMW? We've got a lot of golf to discuss, Carlos. Let's go.
We have a lot to talk about, and we're going to talk about that Dustin Johnson's win. A little bit later on, we're going to switch gears a little bit this week because, as everybody knows, yesterday was Captain's Pick Day for DL3's Davis Love III, and they were finally announced. Wow, Ryder Cup Captain Davis Love III. We're going to do this our practice range, and we're going to start talking about that. You know, Ryder Cup Captain Davis Love III revealed three of his four captains pick on Monday, Ricky Fowler, J.B. Holmes, and Matt Kuchar. And while many analysts had opinions on who should make the team, the final decision actually came down to comfort level and trust. In other words, if you're going out to fight the enemy, who do you believe will have your back and help the entire team most? The captain explained his process at two press conferences, not one, two, one televised and one not. Love, the assistant captains, and the first eight members of the team all had input into the three picks, and they did not necessarily go for the best players available. The decision was based on who would partner best with the eight automatic qualifiers for Team USA. Apparently, and I say this apparently because there's a big if, by what DL3 said, it was not an easy or quick choice. He had Steve Stricker calling in on a satellite phone and was with Jim Furyk and Tom Lehman. They all had Tiger Woods on speaker. They used 3x5 cards and moved team members around with potential auditions. According to Love, all the assistant captains had valuable input. Tiger Woods was helpful from a big picture point of view. The drama towards the end of the BMW Championship, much of which involved Holmes and Fowler, didn't factor into their picks, although they did watch the tournament to the end. Once it was over, Love called and texted the picks to some of the team members, asking them to not reveal anything, please. Love will make his final captain's pick after the Tour Championship. He would not be pinned down as to how many players remain on his shortlist when asked if it was a group he could count on one hand or two hands. He said, yes, I'm not limiting myself for sure. End of quote. But a few questions later, he slipped up and said, we're going to make four guys happy and eight or ten unhappy. End of quote. So his shortlist is probably between four or six players. However, one important wrinkle in the final pick is that the three new members, Fowler, Holmes, and Kuchar, will also have input as to who that person should be. When it comes down to the last pick, the will of the team as a whole, the compatibility of the golfers, the strategies for playing the golf course, and the potential pairings will likely outweigh any finish at the Tour Championship, this according to the captain and what the committee, the great committee that they have, wow, that whole brain trust is thinking about doing. Fred, what's your take on the three picks, and I mean, why is the U.S. waiting so long to make their captain's picks? I mean, is this committee following this out?
You know, Carlos, it just, to me, it really just comes down to suck as much media coverage as you can out of the whole deal. That's really what it boils down to me. I think it's a bunch of hogwash, actually. But, yeah, you know, he picked the three guys. Not really a lot of surprise there. Although, you know, picking J.B. Holmes instead of Bubba Watson, the number seventh-ranked player in the world, J.B. Holmes truly played his way back onto the team because he's had a good year, but, you know, since a fourth at the Memorial, a third at the Open Championship, he missed three straight cuts in July and August, and then he finished 41st, 33rd, and then he got the fourth at the Barclays. So he really played his way onto the team, believe it. So you know, good for him. I just didn't have him on there. I really thought they would pick Bubba over JB. I knew it had to be Matt Kuchar. I knew it had to be Ricky Fowler. I'm of the opinion, Carlos, that Bubba does not want to play. You know, we saw him draw out of the World Cup here a week or so ago, and Ricky Fowler took the spot and announced he's going to pick Jimmy Walker. So that was a big clue right there that Ricky was going to be on the Ryder Cup team and paired with Jimmy Walker in the Ryder Cup matches. That was pretty much a given. And that's telling me that for some reason, Bubba wants to stay closer to home, and he may take some time off. I'm looking for him to announce after the Tour Championship, maybe that he's just taking some time off. I don't know. You know, Bubba's pretty flaky. Who knows what goes through his mind? I'm not sure. Something's bugging him. He's not been himself the last month or so. I don't know. There's something going on there. But anyhow, Ricky Fowler, he came home after the Olympics, played in the Wyndham, played well at the Barclays. You know, he's a great match player, and he's well-liked by the rest of the team. He had to be on the team. Just no question about it. He had to be on. He's played okay, nothing great this year. Hard to believe he's out of the FedEx Cup, not in the final 30 for the Tour Championship. That's really hard to believe, but there it is. Matt Kuchar had to be on the team. Mr. Consistency, always steady, can pair up with anyone. He's number 17 in the official world golf ranking, number 16 in the FedEx Cup. He's at 10 top 10s this year with three third-place finishes, so that's a great year. I talked about J.B. Holmes. You know, Jeff Shackelford did a survey, and the survey came out almost exactly like the picks, although the survey did have Bubba about 20 points ahead of Ricky Fowler, which, again, I don't know. Bubba not being picked, there's something goofy there. You know, you're talking about, is the U.S. waiting too long to pick a Ryder Cup team? You know, is this committee following things up? You know, I can see no earthly reason for this whole situation. And to listen to Love, I've listened to Love at the PGA Championship. I listened to him at the Memorial. I listened to him at the U.S. Open. We talked to him. We had him on air after the Memorial Tournament. He did an interview. They have been grinding these numbers, turning them in every which way but sideways. Some of the numbers mean something. Some of them don't. I don't know. I just think they're overanalyzing every little piece. Love says, well, that's what Furyk and Woods help him decipher, stuff that's too technical. You know, they back away from and say, okay, no, we need to do this. Then Phil comes out last week and says everything was already scripted. Who was playing with who and when? It's a done deal. He said this last week. You know, he said everything was decided a long time ago. The players already know who they're going to play with. No surprises. You know, they're not going to be changed at the last minute and 30 minutes before your tee time. Oh, you're going to play with this guy. And, okay, now figure it out. So, you know, you kind of wonder who really the captain is there. Is Phil really the captain and nobody's, you know, really saying it? I wonder how Tiger feels about all that. This could be a colossal. You know, we thought Medina was bad, okay? If this thing goes sideways for these guys, with all the stuff that they've done before the tournament, they're going to look so bad. The PGA is going to look so bad. You know what? Ted Bishop's going to be sitting over there in Indianapolis laughing his butt off, okay? This thing could be a real nightmare if it doesn't pan out. So, like I said, Carlos, the three picks were fairly well predicted. Who's going to be the final pick? We're going to talk about that in a minute. You know, you've got some young guys there. You've got some old guys there to choose from. But to me, Carlos, the way these picks are being handled, it's purely for free advertisement in the media and on Golf Channel. They're stringing this thing out, you know, to get the maximum amount of exposure. You know, waiting for one more pick is just absolutely absurd. And they probably know who it is anyhow. I can see no earthly reason for it. What some guy's going to play well enough, you know, at the Tour Championship to push Bubba off the team? I don't think so. Davis Love said Tiger and Furyk are crunching numbers, giving him a unique perspective on the course, where the players are at. You know, hasn't he had a 30-year career? Doesn't he have 20-plus PGA Tour wins? I mean, he's no slouch, okay? Plus, he's been there before for this Ryder Cup captaincy thing. So, I mean, he's been there, done that. He's got the T-shirt. The whole thing is just getting so overblown. I'm kind of actually beginning to tire of it, Carlos. It's just too much. You know, in my experience in business, whenever there's a committee involved, the only reason you get a committee is to spread the blame. So when things go bad, well, the committee, you know, or you can spread the blame out among a bunch of people and not. In this case, Davis Love's going to bear the brunt of it. Okay, I don't care if it's good, bad, whatever. Davis Love's going to get the hell if this thing goes bad. But this thing could be a major, major flop. I we'll see. We'll see, Carlos.
I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to be. I have been telling you. There's no way the U.S. is going to beat Europe. It's no way it's going to happen. And I have to agree with you. This waiting so long, like, it clicked when Phil spilled the beans. And I remember when we talked about this committee for the first time, and we went over this the same way. It's just they want to share the blame. It's the same thing. It's just so ridiculous to be doing this. And you already know who's going to be paired with. Of course, it's going to be Ricky Fowler and Jimmy Walker. DJ is going to be with Matt Kuchar. Lefty is going to be with Zach Johnson. Jordan Spieth is going to be with Patrick Reed. Brooks is going to be with Snedeker. The only one left to pair will be JB. And who is it going to be? Bubba Watson should be the one. I mean, waiting for all this, and of course they should know already. I mean, there's a lot of people that travel with these guys that just to wait for the last moment to tell them, hey, you got to go to Minneapolis tomorrow because you've been picked. No, that's not going to happen. I mean, Europe picked them a month before that. They know how to do these things, and
that's only fair. I mean, these guys have families; they got other stuff going on. If I'm not going to be in Minneapolis, I need to be making appearances. I need to be making money doing other stuff or being home. Like, you can't just tell them the night before, "Hey, suit up, we're going up to Minneapolis." That's just ridiculous, Carl.
There's also this uniforms. I mean, everything has to be ready. They're not just going to make it just one day before of it. Overnight. It's not going to happen that way. I mean, and why I say this is, you know, why the U.S. is going to lose. I mean, Davis Love, they've been saying stats matter, but then they come and now say, well, it doesn't matter if the player was ranked on the top, if he hits the ball long and all that. I don't know, you know, like he said, experience is going to help us. Well, I truly hope you're right, Davis, because, and I am proven wrong, even though the stats say the contrary, because since 2010, U.S. rookies are 22-17-9. Veterans are 10 matches under 500, 31-41-11. It's not even close.
What a stat. Where'd you dig that one up from? You did some work on that one, didn't you?
Because I've been telling you, I've been defending my rookies on the Ryder Cup, and they talk about stats, I can bring them stats. I mean, let's take this other stat. In the world top 10 players in the Ryder Cup since 2004, the U.S., the top 10 players that have played in the Ryder Cup are 32-48-7. The Europeans, 44-24-14. It's not even close. This is not a matter. I mean, rookies are the role of the rookies is just overblown. And what will be interesting now is to see what Love does. Love or the committee. Sorry. That's with that final pick. It seems to me as if Jim Furyk, who also missed the tour championship, will be left out. I think that even though he checks in the box that they have to set of a good fit with the team, I truly think he needed to get to East Lake to justify his presence on the team. Will it go to a young player like Daniel Berger or Justin Thomas? I would have loved for both of them to be there. Or a veteran grinder like Kevin Na, Ryan Moore. Will Bubba Watson snack?
Oh, there's no way those guys are going to Carlos. No way those guys are. People don't even know who they are sitting at home. They want the TV cover. They want eyes watching this thing. They don't want Kevin Na or Ryan Moore. Give me a break.
It would be pretty crazy if a top 10 player, Watson, number 7 in the official World Golf Rankings, currently did not make the team. I mean, based on Love's first three captain's picks, I have to think that it will be a traditional selection that Bubba. Okay, and I truly believe, because you brought this up, that maybe Bubba doesn't wanna play. I have truly believed that this apparent, I mean, you know, he's apparent snob, might have been something different. It might have been like a wake-up call for him. Because when you read between the lines of DL3's comments and how the players are supposed to be ready to fill in all types of roles, it might be an either you shape up or ship out call for him. I have heard the argument that are valid, of course, justifying why he shouldn't be on the team. I mean, since March, he hasn't had a top 10 finish, and in five singles matches, he's 0-4-1. But if you come to think about it, Ricky Fowler has not won a match outright anyway. But, you know, if he doesn't get that final spot, I really don't want to hear one single soul that scorched Darren Clark for not picking Russell Knox to even think about criticizing Clark again. Okay? Because it's the same thing. It's the same thing. You want to talk about that? Well, you say Ryan Moore, the former U.S. amateur champ? Well,
I don't know. Picking Lee Westwood. Picking Lee Westwood over Russell Knox. That leaves yourself open for some
Lee
big
was,
criticism.
Lee's playing well. Lee didn't play himself out. And it's the same thing right here, because if you're leaving Bubba Watson, if you come to think about it, they are picking, they're apparently leaving Bubba out because he doesn't fit in. Well, Russell didn't fit in with the guys that are right now on the Ryder Cup for Europe. And, you know, Ryan Moore could make his case if he has a win or a great outing at the Tour Championship. I mean, he has a win and two more top tens in his last five starts. And he has 105 birdies or eagles, which are 17 more than anyone on tour since the Travelers. He's in great, great shape. But to me, I would have loved to see Berger or Thomas see it up against Sergio or Rory in a singles match. Heck, I would have loved to see both of those guys over Bubba or JV. Not because I don't like JV or Bubba, but because they represent the kind of attitude the U.S. needs to infuse if they are ever going to beat Europe for.
Carlos, I'm giving you an A++ for the stats tonight, buddy. You are bringing the heat. Let me tell you, you got the numbers. 105 birdies. What is that? 100? What did you say?
105 birdies and eagles against the Travelers. For Ryan Moore, 17 more than anybody else.
Man, that's doing your homework. Good job. You know what? You know, it comes down to me on this last pick thing. You've got Bubba, who we think is probably going to be it. And there's one other contingency here for Bubba that we haven't talked about that we probably should mention. The third option is that they did this on purpose, and Bubba is just playing a trick, okay? Like, oh, you guys thought they were going to pick me or whatever. Sure, right. I knew all along, you know, they're going to pick me. We're just trying to play with you guys. So, I mean, that is a possibility. I'm not sure, but that's a possibility.
It could be.
Yeah, and then you got the two young guys, Justin Thomas or Daniel Berger, which for whatever reason, Daniel Berger seems to have the edge over Justin Thomas. I would rather have Justin Thomas I will take him every day over Daniel Berger. I don't like his swing. His swing won't hold up. You know what? He's done well. I just don't think he's got a swing that's going to hold on for a long period of time. And under pressure, I just don't think it will. And then you've got the old guy, Mr. 58, Jim Stricker. You know, he had a couple pretty good weeks. He was off for a long time with injury. And he's, you know, he's a grinder. He's a great team player. You can put him out there in foursomes, and he's perfect for that. Nothing special on singles. So if it's me picking Carlos, I'm not picking Jim Furyk. I love him to death. I love to watch him play. I just am amazed at the success he's had and the long career that he's had. I have a tremendous amount of respect for him, but I'm not picking him. And I'm not picking Justin Thomas, and I'm not picking Daniel Berger. I'm picking Bubba Watson. So even though he's a goof and he's a flake, you got to pick the number 7 in the world. I don't care if he hasn't won since, or hasn't done well since, you know, June or whatever. He's still Bubba, and he could light it up in a heartbeat. So if they can get him involved, if they can get him engaged, I just don't feel you hit on a good point there. You know, he's terrible in singles, and it's just kind of like he goes out there, oh, I don't care. You know, I don't care, you know. He's got to show, you know, he did, you know, in the team matches at Medina, he went out and, you know, let's make a bunch of noise and hit a good shot with a bunch of noise, and it gets incredible. You know, when that's the Bubba that plays well, okay? But the Bubba that's when, you know, something gets under his skin and he just gets a little down or something annoys him in the singles and he doesn't have anybody else pick him up, you know, it's over. He's toast. And as close as these things have been, one singles match, you know, that means a lot in a Ryder Cup. So I don't know. I'm still picking him, though. Even though I'm arguing against it, I'm still picking him, Carlos. I think the 3 picks were pretty much, you know, had to be. That's just the way it was going to be. Although I'm surprised they didn't hold JB off until after the Tour Championship. I'm surprised they didn't announce Bubba first. But, you know, I just think the whole thing's getting out of control. And so let me just say this, that the scenario, what do they do next? What do they do? Where do they go with a European team with 6 rookies? Half their team are rookies, okay? If they beat the American team this time on home soil at Hazeltine, what the hell does the PGA of America do next? That's my question. That's what I'm really waiting to find out.
No, I can't wait for it to happen, because I'm telling you, there's no way they're going to lose. They're going to win. And the only thing I would say, and this is my last stat on this, is maybe J.B. Holmes is here because he has never lost when he's representing the U.S. in a team competition. 2005 in the Palmer Cup, he won. 2005 in the Walker Cup, he won. 2008 in the Ryder Cup, he won. And you might remember what happened in that 2008 Ryder Cup. His most iconic Ryder Cup moment may have been when he asked for a tree limb to be removed on the 16th hole at Valhalla in 2008. It was in the way of his drive. You know what JB wants, he gets. So he's a winner
in
this team.
He gets it in Kentucky.
He has to be. Last year, the President Cup, he won. So he's 4-0 in U.S. team appearances. 2016, I think the streak ends. But anyway, one more thought about, you know, what Matt Kuchar said about the supposedly legendary pick.
That's just where I was going, Carlos. You're reading my mind again.
That thing was, we're going again for this kind of thing, you know, the topic that we've been talking about, this being for ratings. This is for show what they're doing. I mean, calling in that Tiger Woods is a possibility. That's a pick. I mean, Tiger Woods is my guy, as just as Jack Nicklaus is yours. But even this, I wouldn't even be thinking about the possibility of Tiger Woods playing here. It would be such a disrespect to everybody else to pick him.
But it would be big for TV ratings.
Oh, it will be.
And the PGA of America love them ratings.
But I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen.
I would be very surprised. I would be very, very surprised. I would be shocked. Not too many things shock me, but that would shock me. You know, Tiger says he's ready to play, but even if he only plays one match on Thursday, one match on Friday, one match on Saturday, and a singles match on Sunday, that would be a lot of golf for a guy who has not been out on tour playing at all. So the practicality of that just, you know, it just doesn't fit. But, man, it would draw to the screen.
Definitely. Go off the charts, the ratings. The ratings just, it would be awesome. But, hey, with that, let's close our practice range. That's our thoughts on Davis Love, the third picks, of course. Once the final pick of Bubba Watson, we don't know which one it is, but the final pick, once it is done, we'll be here to talk about it and finally give you a preview that week for what will be the Ryder Cup. Hey, we're going to take our first short break, and when we come back, then we're going to get geared up with what happened this past weekend on the week in backswing, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the weekend backswing, when we recap what happened this past weekend in the major tours. And Fred, the news is about the FedEx Cup Finals and Dustin Johnson. He keeps going right now the right way towards the Player of the Year. In my mind, right now he has almost a lock on it, and he won in overdrive at the BMW Championship. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, the third leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs was last week, the B&W Championship at Indianapolis. The 2016 season is over for those outside the top 30, and they'll get a week off before the Tour Championship at Eastlake next week. For the top tour players, the last 3 months have been a whirlwind of activity. Two major championships, a WGC, the Olympics, and then trying to make some Ryder Cup teams. Injuries are piling up, Carlos. Henrik Stenson dealing with a bum knee. Jason Day pulled out of the BMW with a bad back. Plus, Justin Rose took last week off to rest his achy back. Is the season too long? The Olympics caused a scheduling problem, which we all know, for the best players, who then had to jump right back into the FedEx Cup playoffs. So, Dustin Johnson won the BMW in a dominating fashion, 67-63 course record on Friday, 68-67 on the weekend to win by 3 shots over Paul Casey, who put up a good fight but just didn't have enough. Johnson played the par fives in 15 under for the week and was 23 under on a very good golf course, Carlos. Since the Memorial in June, Johnson has 3 wins, the U.S. Open, the WGC Bridgestone, and the BMW, 3 pretty good fields there. Was runner-up at the Canadian Open and has 8 top 10s in 10 events this year. Those are Tiger-like numbers. I don't care who wins next week at the Tour Championship. Dustin Johnson is the Player of the Year, hands down. He's hitting that fade with his driver for control. He's dialed in his distance with his wedges, and the new putter didn't hurt either. He's overpowering golf courses just like Tiger used to do, except DJ is actually keeping the ball in the fairway. Is the $10 million FedEx Cup next for DJ? I would not bet against him. Can you imagine Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and Jason Day watching him play right now, probably wondering, how do I beat him when he's at his best? Well, the answer is they probably can't. And Jason Day and Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, when they're at their best, there isn't too much better. But I'm telling you what, Dustin Johnson is pretty good right now. Casey played well all week and still lost by three shots. When Casey eagled the 15th to close within a shot, DJ put in his own eagle and went back to three up. The top names have won the three playoff events thus far: Patrick Reed, Roy McIlroy, and now Dustin Johnson. The top 10 heading into the Tour Championship in 2 weeks: Dustin Johnson, Adam Scott, Patrick Reed, Jason Day, Paul Casey, Roy McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Russell Knox, and Mio Anagrio and Jimmy Walker. The points are going to reset, which is going to make it easier for someone else to win the 10 mil. But if Dustin Johnson shows up with the same game he's had for the last 4 months, it's a done deal, Carlos, and then giving the Player of the Year trophy right now.
I have to agree. I've been saying he's a lock right now as well. And one thing, Dustin Johnson, since 2008, the most PGA Tour wins, Tiger Woods has 18, Rory has 12, and now DJ has 12 as well. So those are the top three winners there, and he set that record. Like you mentioned, the 23 under, he beat that record from Jason Day last year and Tiger Woods in 2007. And the putter is what really has been making a difference for him. And I think Jason Day might have been like, what did I do, when he recommended for him to use the mallet putter. I mean, it was last week. And then Dustin said to his brother Austin, hey, put it on the bag. And wow, he's the first PGA Tour winner this season to rank first or second in both strokes gained tee to green and strokes gained putting. So now he's adding the putting to his already great record and driving and approaching to the greens. And like you said, I don't see how. I mean, in the Ryder Cup, I mean, they can leave him alone. They shouldn't even play foursomes or anything else with him. Just leave him playing singles. He can overpower everybody else right now.
Don't get my road. But just leave me alone.
Yeah, get out of the way. Let him play alone. He can win against two guys there. The way that he's playing, it's great. It's just a show to see him. And definitely whatever happens next week, he should be the winner there. There are five players that can win it outright. Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed is number two, Adam Scott number three. Jason Day, who pulled out because of discomfort in his back, he remained number four. Paul Casey, who did everything to try to beat Dustin Johnson this past weekend. I mean, when Dustin Johnson went two double bogeys and Paul Casey went three birdies in that opening and really tied him, then Dustin Johnson came back and did two birdies. So that's how nothing faces Dustin Johnson. He's just playing incredible, incredible golf right now. Hey, there was action as well in the European Tour, where Joost Luiten of the Netherlands made 10 birdies in a final 8-under par round of 63 to win the Dutch Open by three shots. It was the fifth European Tour victory for Luiten, who also won this tournament, the KLM Open, in 2013. He came into the final round two shots behind overnight leader Scott Hand, but the Australian could not match Luiten's blistering pace and drop out of contention after finding the water at the 9th and 15th holes for a pair of double bogeys. The round soon became a battle between the Dutchman and Bernd Wiesberger of Austria, but birdies at the 14th and 15th holes, followed by a bogey by the Austrian at the 17th, gave Luiten a cushion. Luiten's 10th birdie of his round at the 17th stretched his lead to three shots, allowing him to par the last hole to complete his fifth to win on the European Tour. Luiten finished with a 19-under par total, 265 with Wiesberger's round, which included an eagle at the par 5-6, 6-under at 65. Benny Ahn of South Korea was third, three shots further back with Hind in a tie for fourth on a 12-under after a disappointing round of 2-over. Thomas Peters, who is Belgium's Ryder Cup wildcard, he had to pull out of the Dutch Open on Thursday after suffering an allergic reaction to a bee sting. The 24-year-old defending champion was stung during a challenge round earlier in the week on Monday while playing alongside the eventual winner, Juice Leuthen. You know, I wonder if Leuthen knew this was the only thing that can stop Peters these days and get him, hey, go near those bees. You know, they don't do anything. No, just kidding. But anyway.
It was a Coca-Cola he dumped on him there, spilled on him so it would attract him.
Anyway, Peters, who's one of the longest hitters in the game, will make his Ryder Cup debut for Europe against the USA at Hazel team at the end of the month. He's one of six rookies on the 12-man European team, which will be defending the title. One more interesting feature, you know, that shows Keith Pelly is willing to keep tweaking things up and use the sponsors to help on in his way to improve the European Tour standing. The event unveiled a Beat the Pro competition, where one amateur teed up with each group Thursday and Saturday in a 14th hole closest to the pin contest with the pros. Sponsors KLM and ING Private Banking came up with the concept and invested in it with an amphitheater grandstand setup around the green to make the 14th hole a centerpiece. Three amateurs actually achieved the feat, most notably a 13-year-old Dutchman, and remember his name because if he did that in 13 years, by the name of Benjamin Roeder, and 19 handicap, who stood up on the tee and bettered the approaches of two Ryder Cup stars and a major champion in the forms of Nicholas Coulthard, Stephen Gallagher, and Y.E. Yang. The crowd erupted for the hometown teenager. The players actually enjoyed the action. I don't know about the ones who got beat. But this is another great move to keep things interesting there and getting the fans closer to the players in the European Tour. I tell you, Mr. Pelly is on the right track. Fred, you have the results now from the Web.com Tour Finals where your guy, Bryson DeChambeau, proved he's as popular as Andrew Beef Johnson as the galleries follow him out, but he took something that Beef wanted. What is that?
Yeah, before I get to that, Carlos, one other note from the KLM there. Chris Wood returned to play after his wedding. He'd taken a couple weeks off. I think he finished like T59 or something. But you know, he's a Ryder Cup guy, one of the rookies. And so Darren Clark, I'm sure, was glad to get him back playing a little bit. Yeah, the Web.com Tour was right over here in Cleveland last week. Bryson DeChambeau earned his 2017 PGA Tour card by winning. That'll guarantee he's in the top 25 here at the end of the Web.com Tour Finals. You know, we saw the 2015 U.S. Amateur and NCAA Individual Champ, DeChambeau, turn professional and try to earn enough by using sponsors exemptions on the PGA Tour to earn his tour card for next year. Well, he came up a bit short. But he did have a decent showing on the big tour this year. He made a few bucks. He will be a full member in 2017, however, via his win last week. DeChambeau won the first leg of the Web.com Tour Finals at historic Canterbury Golf Club in Cleveland. He had to survive a four-man playoff to accomplish the feat. DeChambeau, Andres Gonzalez, Julian Edelein, and Nicholas Lindheim all finished at 7-under par. Udelein and Lindheim were eliminated on the first playoff hole with both DeChambeau and Gonzalez made birdie. DeChambeau then holed a 4-foot par putt on the second playoff hole to secure his first win as a professional. He becomes the 15th player in Web.com Tour history to win his first start on that tour. Plus, he's the youngest winner on the Web.com Tour this year. He's 22 years, 11 months, and 26 days. He's almost 23. And I was trying to recall. I think I mentioned last week that this guy DeChambeau was kind of someone to watch in the final series. You know, I think I mentioned that. So, Carlos, I really think he's going to win soon on the PGA Tour when it starts up again in the fall. Wraparound, I wouldn't be surprised to see him win this fall. And one other thing before I turn it back over to you, Carlos, the USGA is having a couple of their events this week. The Women's Mid-Am is being held in Erie, Pennsylvania at the Kakwa Club, and the Men's Mid-Am is being held at Stonewall in Everson, PA. That's a Tom Doak-designed golf course there, a really good place. The men's quarter and semifinals, as well as the finals, will be aired on Fox on tomorrow and Thursday from 3 to 5. So FS1, Fox Sports 1, semifinals tomorrow, 3 to 5, and on Thursday, 3 to 5 also on FS1.
You know, DeChambeau's win with those single-length irons, could this be the day that the game changed with him? I mean, he has so much following, and definitely that analyzing stuff that he brings, his unique style, and definitely you called it last week here that he was the guy to watch, and he did. He won it, and now he's going to try to secure one of those two top spots where he will have unlimited exemptions next year on the PGA Tour. Hey, recapping now quickly the action of the rest of the tours this past weekend. On the Symetra Tour, Dana Finkelstein won the Garden City Charity at Buffalo Dunes Golf Course in Garden City, Kansas on Sunday. The 23-year-old from Chandler, Arizona, closed with a 71 to finish at 11 under, four strokes ahead of Brittany Benvenuto, who drained an 18-foot birdie putt on the 72nd hole to finish in solo second place, one shot ahead of Brittany Marchand, who finished in solo third. Finkelstein now moves to the 13th spot on the Volvic Race for the Card Money list to fourth with her first career win, and now has earned $73,282. While Benvenuto, she moves to from 20th on the money list to 16th with her payout of $14,425. On the Ladies European Tour, hey, South Korean ladies are not only dominating in the LPGA, there, In Kyung Kim won the ISPS Handa Ladies European Masters in Dusseldorf, Germany on Sunday. The 28-year-old South Korean, perhaps best known for missing a one-foot putt on the last green of the 2012 Kraft Nalisco Championship before losing in a playoff, closed with a 63 at Golf Club Hubbelrath to finish at 17 under, five strokes ahead of Spain's Belén Mosso. On the Challenge Tour, hey, more action from Europe. Bernd Rittenheimer won the European Challenge Tour's Volpa Irish Challenge in Carlow, Ireland on Sunday. The 29-year-old German closed with a 70 at Mount Wolseley Hotel Spa and Golf Resort to finish at 10 under, five strokes ahead of Englishman Marcus Armitage and Sam Walker. The victory, Rittenheimer's second of the season, moved him to the top of the tour's Road to a Man ranking, so he's definitely sure he will be in the European Tour next year. And on our final recap is on Magnus P. at Levy, who won the European Senior Tour's Paris Legends Championship on Sunday. The 51-year-old Swede closed with a 69 on Le Golf National's Le Albatros course to finish at 8 under, two strokes ahead of England's Philip Golden and Welshman's Stephen Dodd and Mark Moland. Finally, we have a quick preview now. After a week off, the LPGA is back in action this week with the playing of the Avian Championship, the final major championship of the 2016 LPGA schedule. Last year, world number one Lydia Ko entered the 11th hole, one shot behind Lexi Thompson. After the final hole, her lead was six shots, and she was for the first time overcome by emotion. She had not only won her first major, she became the youngest female ever to win a major by taking the title at the Evian Resort Golf Club last year. The tournament this year will be the 25th of 33 on this schedule. It is also the fifth and final major of the year, and with that in mind, it will also have a huge impact on many of the end of season awards. For example, Lydia Ko's lead over Arya Jutanen for Rolex Player of the Year and a Hall of Fame point has been reduced to just 5 points. With this being a major championship, the winner will receive 60 points. Lydia's once huge lead in the race for the CME Globe, which is $1 million, over Arya has been reduced to just 248 points. With this being a major championship, the winner will receive 625 points. Lydia's lead on top of this year's money list has shrunk to just 250,000 over, you guessed it, Arya Jutanen. The winner will receive $487,000 this week. So this is very, very important between these two players in deciding those end of the season awards. Right now, it's a great two-girl race. Brooke Henderson, number three, but she's a little far behind. She just doesn't figure right now into this list. But, you know, the first four major championships of this season have been won by four different players from four different countries. The NA Inspiration, Lydia Ko from New Zealand. The KPMG Women's PGA Championship, it was Brooke Henderson from Canada. The U.S. Women's Open, Brittany Lang from the U.S. And the Rico Women's British Open from... It was Arya Yutanagan from Thailand. Fred, all the top LPGA players will be on hand this week, with the exception of the injured NB Park. Will we get our first repeat major championship winner of 2016, or will somebody else join the major winners this year?
Well, if I were a betting person, I would not bet against Lydia Ko. And the way Arya Yutanagan is playing, you know, it might come down to those two, but... this course seems to set up very well. The only problem is they're calling for a lot of rain, so it looks like the course probably is going to play really long, which really plays into Yutanagan's hands over Ko, because she is quite a bit longer than Lydia. So, you know, we'll have to see. But you know, the way those two have been playing this year, they're the class of the field for sure. You know, picturesque Evian Le Bain, they're there in France. It's right on the Lake Geneva on the South Shore. It's a beautiful area. As you mentioned, it's the fifth and final major of the year. The event has a long-standing history. With the last, this will be the fourth year that it's been declared a major by the LPGA Tour. It was 13 years, just the Evian Masters was held as an LPGA and LET co-sanctioned event. So it's been around for a long time. Really a really good golf tournament, big money event. As you mentioned, Lydia Ko is the defending champion. It was her first major championship last year, and she became the youngest major champion in LPGA history with the six-shot triumph last year. There's only nine events remaining on the 2016 LPGA Tour schedule, and there's a lot of stuff up for grabs here, and as you mentioned, most of it comes down to Lydia and Arya. You talked about the difference between them for the race to CME Globe, the Player of the Year, and the money list. A win by Yutanagan would move her ahead of Ko in all those categories. Injee Chun has a commanding nearly 500-point lead for Rookie of the Year over Gabby Lopez, so she's pretty much got that wrapped up. And, Carlos, I know you love your numbers, so I've got a few here for you. 21.5. That's the average age of the winners this year on the LPGA Tour, 21.5. All right, and then through 24 events, with 24 events on the LPGA Tour thus far this year, 21 of those were won by players 23 years old or younger. That's where you get that 21-year average. Three teenagers have won on the LPGA Tour in 2016. That's Lydia Ko, Brooke Henderson, and Minji Lee. In the current Rolex ranking, 7 of the top 10 players in the world are younger than 24. And in the current Rolex rankings, the top 5 players all are from 5 different countries. That's the international flavor of the LPGA Tour. They embrace it. They say, hey, we're in Olympics every week, and they truly are. You know, we know the Koreans are strong. They have a great program there, and there's a lot of great Korean ladies, but of the top 5, they're all from 5 different countries. Matter of fact, I wrote an article, wrote a piece, put it on my blog, you know, where's the next great American woman player coming from? You know, Lexi Thompson would be the obvious choice right now, but she still has some holes in her game that need to be worked out. So I think she's going to be she is a big star, but I think she's going to be a big winner over the next 5 years. But I really think the next big star on the LPGA Tour we may not have seen her yet. She may still be out there in junior high or high school, and it's still coming. And then the last number for you here, Carlos, is nine. Players from nine different countries have won on the LPGA Tour this year. So, and as I mentioned, they're calling for a lot of rain. It seems like it's always raining at the Evian. It's such a beautiful area. I hope they don't. I hope they're able to get most of the event in. I love watching the pictures from there, Carlos.
Oh, it's a great place for what we see, and definitely the action is going to be all the action is going to be centered between Aria and Lydia. But hey, any given Sunday, like in football, anybody can come out and win. And there are a lot of capable players like Lexi Thompson, Brooke Henderson, who can come up and play well and take the title away from them.
Well, you know, this would be a good one for Lexi to win, especially if it's wet. This would be a great place for her to win with her length.
She was close last year. She was close last year. It's just that Lydia had a superb back nine. It wasn't that much what she didn't do that she lost it. It was that Lydia just came out and blasted that final eight holes and really took over. Yep. So Lexi was right there. She could be back and do well this year. With that, we'll finish our weekend backswing and preview of this weekend's Evian Championship, which is the last LPGA major this year. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have the Par 5 news, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News, where we will take you updated on what's going on around the golf world. And Fred, you take the tee shot, and even though the Ryder Cup was big news, Dustin Johnson was big news, there was nothing bigger or more commented anywhere than the return of the Big Cat. Tell us all about it.
He's back! Tiger Woods announced via his website last week that he intends to return to competitive action at the Safeway Classic, formerly theprize.com, which is the first event of the fall wraparound schedule after the Ryder Cup. Plus, he's also shooting for an appearance in Turkey on the European Tour, and his Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas in December, if his back will allow all of that. Right now, wait for it, Tiger is currently number 711 in the OWGR ranking. That is just amazing to me. If you believe Davis Love, Woods is taking his assistant captain duties very seriously for the Ryder Cup that's coming up. Been crunching numbers, making captain's picks, suggestions, checking his list, you know, going to find out who's naughty and nice and all that stuff. Tiger said last Wednesday he's going to play in an event on Monterey for the Tiger Woods Invitational, then playing these other things. He also said, my rehabilitation is to the point where I'm comfortable making plans, but I still have work to do. Whether I play depends on my continued progress and recovery. My hope is to have my game ready to go. I'm looking forward to going to California for my foundation event and Safeway. I'm also excited to return to Turkey and Albany. It could be a fun fall. It was difficult missing tournaments that were important, but he tried to be smart in his recovery, didn't rush it, spent time with his children, and he's also working a lot of other projects. So, Carlos, we're all looking forward to seeing Tiger back on the golf course. We sincerely hope that his physical capability is such that he can once again compete and be a factor in the world golf scene. But every time he makes a swing, you just kind of cringe and hope something else doesn't go. You know, golf is in a very good place with the young guns of today, but when you get to see one of the best three or four golfers that's ever played the game, it's always a bonus. Also, Carlos, a little question about what equipment he's going to use. Of course, he's been under contract with Nike, but Nike's now out of the business. so he's free to use any equipment he wishes. He's been receiving new equipment and offers daily. Nike is making company representatives available to Tiger to make any transition as easy as possible. He's not made any formal announcement as to equipment changes or what's going on, but I'm sure there's a lot of dealing, wheeling and dealing going on, and I'm sure Steinberg's phone is ringing off the hook. Maybe he'll just buy Nike, and you know, then he can continue making what he needs. Just a little tidbit for our listeners here. It was just announced that world number one Jason Day just inked a new apparel deal with Nike. He will continue with TaylorMade equipment, but is going to wear Nike from head to toe. We didn't see that possibility coming. You know, split endorsement deals with Tiger, with Nike and TaylorMade. Adidas is out completely. So, you know, it's been said that he's getting 10 mil a year for 10 years, so 100 mil to wear Nike clothes. You know, Carlos, I happen to like Nike apparel. I would do it for half of that, you know, if they wanted to, you know. Matter of fact, I'd even do it for a lot less than that. If they wanted to pay me, I'd wear their Nike stuff, Carlos. Back to Tiger, though. Since Tiger had nothing better to do, he visited his daughter Samantha's school career day last week. Can't you just hear the introduction on that? Hi, this is my daddy. He just plays golf.
You know, now Nike will have two of the top five players in the world right now with Rory McIlroy. Now, two of the top three players in the world, I mean, and also Tiger Woods.
And
there,
number 700, so. Number 711.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Number 711, Tiger Woods. That's right, that's right. But it's a good jump, you know. They have to represent the low guys as well.
It's they're trying to do their best for the guys to try to make it.
That's a great thing. But anyway.
To be applauded for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They think about those lower guys. Hey, let me talk a little bit about DRNA that has lined up a strong cast of courses for its 2019 championship season, including Royal Portrush for the Open and Port Marnrock for the Amateur. Also on the list, the Seniors Amateur Championship at North Berwick, the Boys Home Internationals at Ashburnham, the Boys Amateur Championship at Saunton East and West, and the Walker Cup at Royal Liverpool. An on-byline Belfast Telegraph story reports on the RNA's choice of Port Marnock, a club still resisting admitting women as members, coming under strong criticism from Rory McIlroy and contradicting the RNA's stance on Muirfield. McIlroy, who has taken over stewardship of the Irish Open through the Rory Foundation, which this year almost raised €1 million for charity in staging the tournament, has admitted that the gender issue is holding back a return of the Irish Open to its original home. It hasn't been staged there since 2003, and given that the tournament is supported by government money, it is unlikely to return as long as the male-only membership rule remains. Although the RNA has adopted a tough stance in refusing to award the British Open to clubs where a single-gender membership policy is in place, golf's governing body has in effect given a pass to Port Marnock Golf Club by awarding the British Amateur Championship for 2019 to the North County Dublin Club, which continues to adopt a men-only membership rule. Given the RNA's blacklisting of men-only golf clubs in determining host venues for the British Open, one of the four major professional championships, it would only seem a matter of time before that stance is extended to all other championships organized by the golf's governing body. But not yet, it seems. And Port Marnock Golf Club, celebrating its 125th anniversary in 3 years' time, has in effect managed to be selected as a host venue for the Amateur Championship before any likely official policy review affecting all the championships run by the RNA. Port Marnock's staging of the British Amateur Championship means it will be a blockbuster summer of golf on the island in 2019, with the British Open being played at the upgraded Donlos links at Royal Portrush the following month. In addition, La Hinge will play host to the Men's Home Internationals. Port Marnock has a long history of hosting championships, including professional events such as the Irish Open and the Dunlop Masters, as well as the prestigious amateur events including the Walker Cup, the St. Andrews Trophy, the Jack Legley's Trophy, the Canada Cup, now the World Cup, and the Ladies British Open Amateur Championship. Fred, the RNA removed Muirfield Golf Club from the British Open Rota earlier this year after the Scottish club refused to admit women members. They should toughen that stance and enforce their policy. Otherwise, they're going to face such a public pressure that will mount, and I'm sure that will force the change either way.
Yeah, and you would think they would want to anyhow. Those kind of tournaments bring in such a huge amount of dollars to the local economy. I'm sure they want that. So, you know, they're going to have to do something. You know, this gender thing still keeps popping up every once in a while. And it's not very often. Most of the clubs have adopted some kind of a policy allowing women members, and even the old stodgy RNA itself did that a couple years ago. So, yeah, I'm sure they'll get something done about it. I kind of hate hearing about all that stuff, but, you know, that's the way it is yet. Hey, the Rookie of the Year Award began back in 1990. Players are eligible for their first season of PGA Tour membership if they competed in less than 7 events from any prior season. Several of the winners have had a good deal of international success before their PGA Tour rookie season, and some have been in their 30s when they won the award, but it was their first PGA Tour season. Former Rookie of the Year Award winner since 1990, John Daly, Vijay Singh, Ernie Els, Tiger Woods, Ricky Fowler, Keegan Bradley, and Jordan Spieth. Did you know that the PGA Tour just ordained Siwoo Kim was a rookie and is eligible for the Rookie of the Year Award? Not too many people did, and it was just announced by the tour this week. Smiley Kaufman and Emiliano Grillo, both with wins on the 2016 PGA Tour, thought they were the only two horses coming down the stretch for the award. But hold your horses, enter Korean Siwoo Kim, who just won the Wyndham Championship a couple of weeks ago. Kim had originally played events on the PGA Tour in 2014, and in 8 starts he missed 7 cuts and withdrew once. So he had 8 starts. The rule says 7. I don't know. You know, maybe they're not counting the 7 cuts. I don't know. He's had 7 cuts and withdrew the other time. So he never played on the weekend in any event. He bounced down to the Web.com Tour in 2014-2015. He continued his poor play in 2014, where he missed 14 cuts in 19 events on the Web.com. You know, he must have had a very understanding sponsor or a very rich uncle or something to, you know, keep out there playing. I don't know. He couldn't have been making any money. He finally broke through for a win in 2015 on the Web.com and finished the year with 2 more top 10s, ended up number 10 on the top 25 to earn his 2016 tour card. Plus, he had 2 million in earnings this year along with his win. So I guess he can pay back his sponsor with that. You know, he is number 18 in the FedEx Cup, so he's going to be around for the Tour Championship. He still misses a lot of cuts, though, 11 in 33 starts this year. But his win at the Wyndham assures him a card for 2 more years. So, as it seems, he's the leader of the Rookie of the Year Award, for some reason, over Smiley Kaufman and Emiliano Grillo. You know, Grillo has a win. He has a runner-up. He has $3.15 million earnings. He's made 21 cuts and 24 starts, and he's number 9 on the FedEx Cup. I mean, he looks like the leader to me. I don't know why they're even talking about this other guy. Smiley Kaufman made 18 cuts versus 10 missed cuts, so not quite as good. He did have a win. He's had 4 top 10s, and he's earned $2.5 million. And he fell out of the top 30 this week, down to 43, so he's out. He won't be in the Tour Championship. So if you go strictly by the numbers, Carlos, Grillo should win, but it's a vote by the players, and with Kim winning last, he may get the edge, even though he was a late entry into the race to begin with. It's very confusing to me, very confusing.
I am totally against that. Totally against that because my guy picked at the beginning of the year.
Pretty much one year ago, you picked him. Yes.
What was already locked for him? I mean, he played. It's incredible because Emiliano has played only. I mean, SeaWorld has played to 33 and 24 against for Emiliano. And Emiliano is way ahead of him. I don't know. I don't know why they're doing this. I don't understand it. But anyway, Emiliano, go out and finish top 10 in the East Lake. Forget about it. And you have this. To me, it should be no contest for anybody else. He should be the one that would give you.
He's been playing really well in the playoffs, so he could finish top 10.
He does. He only had a relatively bad tournament now in the BMW, but the other two have been very good for him. So we'll see what happens, but to me, Emiliano should be a lock, just like Dustin Johnson is a lock to be the player of the year. Hey, we have some news also. Rumors going around that the LPGA will curtail the Q School. Must come through the Symetra Tour now, and apparently this would stop internationals from jumping right to the LPGA. Fred, you mentioned as part of the preparation for this topic that you are not sure that it's going to stop talented Korean players from getting on the LPGA because, you know, they don't need to go through Q School. They just went and earned an exemption. Well, you're right. They could do it, but I believe if this about eliminating Q School would be true, I would be all for it, first of all. I think the qualification process should be equal for everyone, a year-long process. And, hey, if the internationals, specifically the South Koreans, that would like to jump right into the LPGA are that good, then let them try it out and make it. I mean, even Symetra Tour players, if they want to try the same tactic, go ahead. Go ahead, try it. I mean, it won't be as if it's happening or it would happen by bunches. The strength of the LPGA Tour is really off the charts. If a non-LPGA player wins a tournament there where the best players play almost every single week, hey, she deserves to be part of it, and kudos to her. Let her do it. I mean, it's not going to happen that easy. Look, this is also a business. They have to grow the Symetra Tour somehow. And what a better way to attract more and, by consequence, better players to it this way. Like you also said on the preparation, the scenarios are just a speculation so far because the LPGA has not released any of the details of the new plan it is now exploring. There's no question that young women players from around the globe will be anxious to learn precisely what the new system will be. If they have designs on an LPGA career, they will have to adjust their playing paths accordingly to give themselves the best chances of making it to the premier tour in the world of women's golf. As far as the Korean Tour, Japan Tour becoming a feeder tour for the LPGA, well, I would say that all tours right now, female tours, other than the LPGA, are working as such. The game is such an international game now, and more so on the women's side. We can't really say the LPGA is a U.S. tour anymore. It has become a global tour with an identity of its own. By visiting so many countries around the globe throughout the year, it gives exposure to the local-based tours, which in exchange boost their players' chances to improve and make it to the biggest female tour in the world. Not even the Ladies European Tour is close to becoming a threat to the LPGA so far. I think Michael Wan and his excellent team there are wise enough and open to recognize the importance of these other smaller tours, and they know how to work in conjunction with them to relegate the participation, their tours, and especially the LPGA Tour membership. Fred, let them eliminate that Q School. Those concepts are old in nature, and everyone should play for the Signature Tour.
Yeah, and, you know, more importantly, you know, this is I picked this up this week that, you know, there's a young lady on the Korean tour, like, you know, Korea needs more good young players, but Sun Young Park, who doesn't play here on the LPGA Tour, but she is so dominated this year on the Korean tour that she's made more money than Hana Yang, who's won twice over here. She's, you know, way up there. I think with what she's won, she'd be like fourth on the U.S. money list or something like that. The Korean tour is becoming a viable competition money-wise for the LPGA Tour. You know, that's the thing, you know, with the PGA Tour and the European Tour, you know, the European Tour pays about one-fifth of what the PGA Tour, what you can make playing the PGA Tour. So that's why all the guys want to come over here, because the money's so much better. You know, everybody wants to come to the LPGA Tour because the money was better. Well, now, with the Japanese Tour playing well, the Korean Tour playing well, you know, they don't, the young women don't necessarily have to come to the U.S. They can hang around, play the Asian events, and make pretty good money. So that's a little alarming to me, Carlos, that is indeed a fact. So we'll have to see how that goes, actually. Hey, Carlos, you know, we talked about simplification of the rules of golf by the USGA and the RNA. Last week, you know, we talked about it on the practice range, and, you know, we both said we just didn't see it happening. Well, Jerry Tucker, who runs the Treasure Coast Senior Tour in Florida, it's a mini tour for seniors, has kind of taken matters into his own hands and applied local rules to deal with out of bounds. And he feels the rules as a whole are terribly outdated and need to be modernized. We're with you, Jerry. We feel your pain, buddy. When the rules of golf were written, there weren't too many condos or other buildings running adjacent to the golf course. Unless you count the occasional sheep barn, you just had to watch out for the sheep droppings. Tucker's idea is simple. There's no longer a distinction between a ball hit out of bounds, the white stakes, in a lateral hazard, the red stakes, or a water hazard, the yellow stakes. Regardless, it's a one-shot penalty. Find the nearest point of relief and play on. You're speaking my language. I have to admit, Carlos, I have played that way for a long time. When playing casual rounds, it speeds up play, keeps things moving. Don't look for it. They make them every day. Drop another one. Let's go. Traditionalists will howl at such a stance because that's what they do. Hey, the USGA once looked at rangefinders as a bigger scourge to the game than turf fungus or square grooves. Now they're even allowing them in USGA championships. Recent events in the U.S. Women's and Men's Opens prove the point that golf courses and golf rules are increasing more out of date and need some work. If bodies like USGA and the RNA entrusted with the keeping of the rules don't do their job, then the people are going to take the matters into their own hands and do it for them. I applaud him for this, Carlos, and I told you that's what's going to happen. The PGA Tour, the LPGA Tour, the European Tour, all these bodies, they're just going to make their own rules, and they're going to say, USGA and RNA, you guys are out of it. You have no clue. We're just going with what we feel is right. And I just see that happening, Carlos. You know, it's only by the good grace of the PGA Tour and the Masters and the PGA of America that they hang in there and follow the rules that the USGA sets down. They don't have to do that. They could go make their own.
Definitely, and I couldn't agree more. Hopefully it does happen. We've been talking about this for a long time as well, and hopefully something happens because they're so outdated, it's really sickening and really not helping the golf grow. Hey, let's take that. With that, we'll end our Power 5 news. We're going to take our last short break, and when we come back, we have our final putts, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for Final Pots. And let me tell you something. I'm a real big horse racing fan. And since very little, my late grandfather was a horse race, thoroughbred horse race trainer, and he took me to the track since a very early age, so I'm a lover of that. And I had never seen what happened last Friday. In a bizarre turn of events at Sandown Park's first race Friday there in the UK. You know, a pair of jockeys were able to avoid serious injury resulting from a stray golf ball on the course, and that was reported by telegraph.co.uk. You know, the track is located next to a golf course, and though it is regularly swept for stray golf balls, they can be missed because it's grass where they're running. It's not dirt. They run grass. And they can be missed in the 4 to 5 inch turf course, and that's what Andrew Cooper, the clerk of the course, said. In this case, a horse in front of the pack kicked up the golf ball, which bounced off of jockey Charlie Bennett's helmet. The ball ricocheted in front of jockey Kieran Fox's mount, looks for it, causing the horse to spook and jump to the right, unseating Fox. I mean, everything, it happened so fast. Fox says he didn't know what had caused it, but if you can see the on the replay, it hit Charlie's helmet and straight across in front of his filly's face. I mean, thank God, neither rider nor the horse were injured, and both riders rode races later on the card. But talk about bizarre stuff, that's something I never seen before. And it took a golf ball in a horse racing event. Wow, incredible. And finally, Barry Gibbons has played more rounds of golf this year than some most casual golfers will play in their entire lifetime, and that is not an exaggeration. Thus far in 2016, Gibbons has played 585 rounds of golf and is liable to tack on another handful of rounds by the time you finish listening to this. He's currently on pace for around 850 rounds of golf this year. My goodness. For over three decades, the Richfield, Connecticut resident worked at IBM, and he hoped he could play more golf. Now, having retired at the age of 55, he can. But one thing he has going in his way, so in pursuit of this record, is that he's married to a woman she has haven't really earned, because she's just as passionate about him breaking the record for the most round playing of the year, which is currently 611, as he is. His wife, Joy, even set up this website for him that tracks his pace, accepts donations, and answers any questions curious onlookers may have. Fred, I think it's safe to say that he'll squash that record, definitely, and I just wish that I could have the stamina to play one round daily a week. And for him, I think that being a 2.5 handicap is helping.
You know, Carlos, I mean, that's like 2.3 rounds per day average every day of the year. He ain't taking time off to go to church, okay? 2.3 rounds. He said, you know, he lives down in Texas over the winter, and so he plays three rounds a day. Three rounds a day. Carlos, I go on these golf trips, okay, and some days we play 36 holes, okay, and we play, you know, like 18 for like 5 days or something. I come home. I put my clubs in the trunk of the car. I don't want to see them, okay? I don't want to be around them. You know, I don't want to play for a few days. How do you play that much golf? I mean, that's worse. You might as well get a job. That's worse than a job, man. Hey,
At 55.
I know. There's no way. Of course, yeah, he's 10 years younger than me, so he's still young, right? Beef Johnson. We got Beef Johnson news. You like that, right?
Yes.
Hey, you remember the young guys last spring had a rousing jolly time at Baker's Bay for spring break. You had Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, and Smiley Coffin hanging out down there in the Bahamas, you know, playing golf shirtless with funny hats on and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Well, Beef Johnson is a fun-loving Englishman, and he's been dropping hints to the guys that he'd kind of like to join them for their spring break 2K17. So I don't know if they're going to embrace him for that, but Justin Thomas did send out a little tweet to the rest of the guys about Beef joining the Good Times. So we'll see how that plays out. You know, I wonder if they would let an old guy like me tag along. That looks like a pretty good time to me, Carlos. I could hang with him for a couple hours before I'd have to go take a nap or go to bed or something. Ben Curtis, he's an Ohio guy, went to Kent State. He is going to temporarily replace golf coach for legendary Kent State, Herb Page, who is recuperating from a quintuple bypass surgery. Curtis will travel with the men's squad this weekend for the 2016-17 season opening Gopher Invitational in Independence, Minnesota. Of course, Curtis is on a break from playing after competing in events on both the PGA and the Web.com tours over the summer. He jumped at the chance to lend his time and experience to a grateful group of Golden Flashes. He said, "Anything to help Herb out. He's done so much for my career. It was the least I could do to support the team and help out the best way I can. After surgery, I knew he wasn't going to be able to go this weekend since it's only been a few weeks. So I said, hey, I'm home. I don't have anything else on my schedule for a few weeks. Be glad to help." So good for Ben jumping up there helping the Golden Flashes of Kent State. And Carlos, for my last story tonight, golf snobbery has been taken to a completely new level with the introduction of the new Clear golf balls. Why they came with the name Clear, I have no idea, but that's what they're called. You know those commercials on TV for the razor blade group where you sign up and they send you new razor blades, new razors every month or week or whatever they do? You know, they're not just for everyone. You have to be a member. Well, golf balls are joining an exclusive membership club atmosphere also. Anybody can play the old beat-up Titleist Pro V1, you know, for $50 a dozen or whatever. And it's only the most popular golf ball in the world. But you'll need an invitation to play the golf balls from Clear Sports LLC. Among celebrities and former professional athletes who play the Clear golf balls are Sean Connery, Bond, James Bond, Paul O'Neill, Jeremy Renick, and Yvonne Lindell. I didn't see your name on that list, Carlos. I'm sure it was just an oversight. You're probably on there somewhere. If you have to ask what the list is or what the ball is, you're probably not on the list. So I guess I'll just keep losing my good old Titleist. They'll sell to anyone, even me, for the right price. And Carlos, I'm out. That's it for September the 13th, 2016.
Well, Back Niners, that will wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, hey, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and hey, enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.